Hello and welcome to the Wisden Ashes Daily Podcast, brought to you by Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of exciting memories since 1979. At one point today, it threatened to be a boring, old-fashioned day of grinding down the opposition test cricket, but England did their thing and got their now customary middle-order wobble in before it was too late to mean that they fell from 170 for 3 to 226 for 8 before a Jos Buttler masterclass carried England to 271 for 8 at the close. I'm Yaz Rana, and with me on the phone from the Oval is the magazine editor of the Wisden Cricket Monthly magazine, Joe Harmon. Joe, let's start at the beginning. Tim Payne opted to bowl first on what looked like a pretty good deck to bat on. Was that more to do with how badly both sides' respective openers have gone this series? Or do you think the conditions influenced that decision?
It's one of those decisions. It feels like if the Ashes were on the line, he wouldn't have made that decision. Certainly Glenn McGrath said he thought that 10 minutes beforehand the Australia were going to bat and then change their mind at the last minute. It was an odd one. I think it took everyone surprise in the press box. Yeah, and it felt like maybe they just thought that with a little bit of cloud cover, a greenish tinge to the pitch, this was their best opportunity to take some early wickets against England. What looks like a very good pitch and was going to turn into a very good batting pitch over the course of the next kind of 4 or 5 days.
I mean, they got an early wicket. Joe Denley fell early, driving at a ball on the up, edging to Smith at second slip. Like Jason Roy, he's not an opener though, so you can't really be that critical of him.
No, you say early wicket, best opening partnership by any side in the series so far.
That's not saying much, though.
It's not saying much. No, we know he's not an opening batsman in county cricket. The issue goes on. It was another kind of fierce examination of his technique today, which he didn't really come through. By contrast, I thought Rory Burns actually looked today probably the best he's looked at any point in the series. Obviously, he scored that 100 first up at Edgbaston, but that was a bit of a scratchy knock. He rode his luck a bit. I thought today, until he played what was a bit of a tame shot to get missed in the end, I thought he looked really comfortable. And I think we are now looking at a test match opener, thank God.
I know, it's taken long enough. On commentary, quite a few of the commentators are pointing out how he's learnt a lot through the series. So after Edgbaston, Australia were targeting him with a short ball. I know he got out to a short ball eventually today, but he seemed to be in control of what he was doing. He wasn't pulling as much as he had been. I found a good Rory Burns stat today. So he's faced more balls in this series than any England opener this decade in a home series. So more than Cook. And also more than Cook face in a home series across his entire career. Yeah, so most balls faced in a home series by an English opener this century. Strauss against Australia in 2009, Atherton against West Indies in 2000, Vaughan against India in 2002, Trescothick against South Africa in 2003, and Burns against Australia in 2019. Amazing series for Rory Burns.
That is an astonishing statistic, particularly when you take into the context of how the other openers have gone in this series, which is obviously terribly, and also the form he came into in this series. I mean, we shouldn't forget that the majority of people probably thought he shouldn't have started the series because he just looked like he couldn't buy a run against Ireland. But and they were saying on the commentary that he seems to learn extremely quickly and there's few better attributes than a test cricketer than that.
Before Jos Buttler's half century at the end of the day, Mitch Marsh was probably the player of the day. I mean, he probably still is. We've not talked about him yet. He was brought into the side in place of co-vice-captain Travis Head, which a lot of people on Australian social media seem to be questioning. He was bowling like Waqar Yunus today, in-swinging Yorkers, dismissing both Bairstow and Wokes. Although Ricky Ponting said in commentary that he thought the Wokes one was an accident, that was supposed to be an outswinger that was way too small and way too straight that just happened to get the wicket. And he got more swing today than anyone else has all series. What do you think about his performance today?
Yeah, I've never seen him bowl like that. He does seem to really enjoy playing against England, though. Given that he's got a fairly modest test record overall, he's got an astonishing record against England. And it's not that a small sample size. He's played 7 tests now against them. He averages 52 with the bat and 26 with the ball. And he took that kind of curious cipher against England in the 2015 World Cup as well. So it's obviously, he seems to kind of mesmerise England's batsmen into doing some fairly strange things. But today, you've got to give him a fair amount of credit. He did bowl beautifully. I didn't actually see the speed he was bowling at, but certainly the one that got Bairstow seemed to hurry him up a little bit as well.
He was bowling mid to high 80s. It was good pace.
Okay, well, that's the impression I got because he hurry Bairstow up on that shot. I think there was a spell of 8 overs, 3 maiden, 3 to 17 after tea, which he ended up getting cramped in the end. I don't think he's bowled too many spells like that in Test cricket, or maybe any first class cricket before. He was very much, I mean, Buttler had the kind of final say with a few flourishes at the end, but it was very much Mitchell Marsh's day, really.
the way he set up Bairstow in particular, that was something that Jimmy Anderson would have been proud of. Away swinger, away swinger, away swinger, then in swinging Yorker. That was genuinely brilliant. We've not mentioned Root yet. That was quite an odd innings from him. He was dropped three times before he got to 35. How do you think he batted today? Do you think there was any sign of him returning to his best form?
The thing with Root, when he's in good touch, it just looks so easy. Everything seems to come so simply to him. And he's battling really hard and he's fighting hard. And he got a good ball, again, as he has done many, many times in this series. But, I mean, when you drop three times between 24 and 30, I think it was, and then you still don't go on and get that big score, that's going to really be nagging away at him. You can't question his attitude, certainly. You could perhaps question his technique, getting bowled again, but as I say, it was a beauty from Cummins. It's a frustrating one. I think we'll see him quietly slip back down to number four at the earliest opportunity. We weren't going to see it in this series because it would have kind of caused too much of a hoo-ha, but I do expect that to happen again. And whether it's psychological or technical, whatever it is, he does seem to be much more comfortable in that position. And I think he's probably won the battle on that argument now.
And yeah, as we've both mentioned, Josh Butler was excellent today. He was patient early in his innings before he accelerated as he started to lose partners. It was exactly the kind of innings that England fans would have envisaged when he was first recalled into the side last year, which he did play last year, but we haven't seen much of it in 2019. So I've got a question. Given that he's one of the cleanest strikers of the cricket ball literally ever, why do you think that he bats like he did towards the end of his innings so rarely? He rarely gets out batting in Test cricket when he's in ODI mode. He's normally out prodding outside off stump. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think part of it is he's trying to prove himself as a Test match batsman. I mean, he's trying to prove that he can adapt his game to different conditions, and he has shown that in Test cricket. He's got runs against India, he's got runs in Sri Lanka in very different ways in Sri Lanka. So I think that's part of it. I think it's too much to expect him to go and just play like he does in ODI cricket. Also, the thing with Butler, even in ODI cricket, he's not a slow starter, but he does take his time getting in, and then he starts the motor, and we haven't really often had the opportunity for Butler to get into that kind of fourth, fifth gear, partly because he hasn't lasted long enough, and partly because England haven't lasted long enough around him, and he's almost been forced into playing like that because wickets have fallen around him, and I guess that's the logic behind batting him at seven, as they did in the last test. Obviously, he's moved up to six for this match. For me, that logic still doesn't stand up. I think he should be batting at probably five, six at the very lowest. And any question marks around his place in this side, I hope, being kind of dampened by that performance today. Because for me, it's been a tough series for him. I mean, he was averaging 16 before today. But again, I think we've got to look beyond the numbers with him. He actually batted well in both innings in different ways in the last test at Old Trafford. And today we saw just how valuable he can be. I mean, at 263, 224 for seven?
Yeah.
That was shaping up to be a terrible day. As it is, everyone's leaving Oval around me now with a bit of a spring in their step, thinking that England had a reasonably good day. Now, I think it's a massive missed opportunity. I think if they do lose this match, then they'll look back and think, well, this was a time where they could have properly piled some pressure on Australia. 103 for one after lunch. That's the time. Australia wouldn't have let England get off the hook, and England have done that here. And Butler's given us all something to cheer, but I'm afraid it's kind of more of the same from England today. A lot of talent there, but a huge amount of frustration with the way they lose their wicket.
On Butler, he's got better through the series, which is to be expected given the lack of red ball cricket he's played, not only in his career, but specifically in 2019. It's interesting that you think that he should bat five or six. I thought that today was the perfect number seven innings, batting with a tail, accelerating when he loses partners. I think long term seven. There's so many people in England who are the ideal five or six, I think, already, and I think Butler just suits seven. And maybe you were messaging me before we started recording this, and you said it's kind of like a, you know, if people are calling for one of Bairstow or Butler to be dropped, it just shouldn't be Butler, but I kind of think you can only really play one of them in an ideal 11. What do you think about that?
Well, that's possibly true. And Butler's not today was the perfect number seven, but I just think he's better than that. I think he can, fair enough, Gilchrist batted a number seven, obviously, but Gilchrist had a fairly handy top six above him. I don't think England's in a position where we've got six batsmen good enough to bat above Josh Butler and hope that he can smash a few at the end. I think he can bat both ways. I think he comes in at five or six. He can play like a test match batsman, and then he can play more expansively when the situation demands it. in terms of the Butler-Bairstow question, I think we probably are potentially moving towards that. It's one or the other, and to me, there's no contest. I think since Butler came into the side, back into the side last summer, Bairstow's averaging 24 with the bat. Butler's averaging 36. I'm not saying 36 is an average he should be aspiring to, but it's obviously significantly better than Bairstow in that time. Folks isn't exactly tearing up in county cricket in terms of scoring runs, but I think folks would come in at 7 as a specialist keeper and other bats at 6. That's the way I'd go. That's not to say Bairstow's test career is over. Obviously, it's not. He's a phenomenal talent, and no doubt he'd go back into county cricket and score a huge amount of runs, but I don't think over the last 2 years we've seen enough of him to justify his place in the side.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair enough. I think that if he did go back into county cricket, we'd see quite a few Johnny Bairstow rage hundreds, the kind of ones we saw at the World Cup when he criticised. Sam Curran was exciting, wasn't he? Hooking, coming to sixth, third ball, out off a no ball, gone for good and over later. Cricket is just better to watch when he's playing.
It does. The game just seems to move in fast forward, doesn't it? I thought with that ball shot that it was a kind of a flinch, but actually looking at it again, he kept his eyes on the ball. It was a really, really good shot. It wasn't an innings that suggested a huge amount of permanence, though, was it? With obviously the LBW shout, or the LBW dismissal, which was turned around because of the no ball. But he does breathe some life into this England side. And it'll be fascinating to see how he goes with the ball tomorrow. I mean, if you weigh up England bowlers of Australia, he's probably the closest to Mitchell Marsh. Mm. Obviously, left arm to right arm, but similar kind of bowling speed. If Marsh can swing it like he did today, then Curran really should be able to do the same. So that'll be really interesting to see, because I think it's Curran, oddly, even though he's a bowling all-rounder, it's the bowler he needs to prove himself more as a batsman if he's going to be a regular in this England test side.
One final question. How do you think the pitch played today, and do you think tomorrow will be a good day for batting?
I thought the pitch looked good from the start, really, and I think this is the worry. I mean, this day is, as I said, it feels like it's a bit of a kind of a cherry on top for England, but actually it's been a fairly miserable day in terms of the score they posted. I think this looks a really good batting wicket. England will hopefully get a few more on the board tomorrow, but you could easily see them being knocked over quickly with a new ball. And then it's over to Australia and Steve Smith, and I think it's hard to say. I reckon Australia are going to have a first innings lead the way things are shaping up. Then it's over to England to post a really big second innings score, which is something they've not really been able to do in this series so far.
Steve Smith's going to score a lot of runs, isn't he? I've got tickets for day 4, so I kind of want him to bat quite long, but not too long. So most of tomorrow, I think I want Smith to bat.
Well, I've got tickets as a punter on day 5, so I'm not quite sure what I want there, really.
For England to do well and it to go to day 5 now, I'm not really sure how that happens. I guess England need to bat really long in the second innings. Anyway, thanks, Joe. Thanks for joining me today.
Yes.
This has been the Wiz and Ashes Daily Podcast, brought to you by Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of exciting memories since 1979. Tomorrow, Taha Hashim and Phil Walker will be on the show. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do, and tell your friends. See you next time.